Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
It's the Premier League preview show for week 34 of the 18-19 season. Do Liverpool want it too much? After last weekend's win at Southampton, are the Reds players going to get engulfed by a fan base who want an English League title more than bees need nectar in springtime? Last time it all went wrong, it was Chelsea at home. This weekend, oh dear. Tottenham have taken a 1-0 lead over Man City in the Champions League, so what better opponent to rest a few against than already down Huddersfield? Though there are fears Harry Kane might miss the rest of this season, and it's Cardiff City's last stand. They simply must beat Burnley on Saturday. I'm Tom Rennie. Our panel today is TalkSport's football editor David Walker. Also with us, Daniel Gabberden, former Palace, Cardiff and West Ham defender. And Stevie Lomas is here as well. We got him through security, former West Ham and Manchester City midfielder. Right, let's get into match one, shall we, lads? Liverpool against Chelsea, Sunday, 4:30 UK time. Liverpool haven't won any of their last six Premier League games at Anfield against Chelsea. The Reds have never endured a longer winless run at home against any opponent in Premier League history. And Chelsea have already won at Liverpool this season, of course, beating them 2-1 in the Carabao Cup, inspired by Eden Hazard, who's in pretty good form right now. Steve Lomas, let's come to you first on this. Who is going to be the 2019 version of Demba Ba? Who is going to fill that Steven Gerrard role? Will Liverpool let this game be the game that slips them up this time?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they cope with Hazard. Like you said, Tom, he's been on fire. The goalie scored his first goal against West Ham. Fantastic. Be interesting to see if he maybe thinks about man-marking him, take him out of the game. But there's always teams, and Danny has tell you, that bogey teams, and Chelsea seem to be Liverpool's. And with, you know, City away at Palace, you think they'll have enough to do a number on. Then the pressure's really on Liverpool.
Liverpool victorious in the Champions League in midweek, Gabs, against Porto. We expected them to win that game, and they did. They're not the 5-0 from last season, just the 2. Were you impressed by the way they performed?
I thought they just did enough, really. Obviously, they got the early goals, and I thought, you know, this could be 4-5. But if anything, the performance kind of tailed off after that. I think the second half, the important thing was just obviously not to concede, keep a clean sheet. I think Porto kind of settled for the 2-0 then as well, because they tried to press a bit in the first half, got opened up and conceded a couple of goals and changed their kind of game plan second half. And Liverpool found it a little bit more difficult to break through. But it was interesting, obviously, Mane kind of coming off. So I think maybe he was looking towards the weekend's game, Klopp, trying to maybe rest him. Firmino kind of came off towards the end as well. So he certainly had the Chelsea game in his mind, I think, towards the end of that game. So it's how they kind of recover and go again against Chelsea. It's going to be a difficult game because Chelsea have come into good form in the last couple of games. I thought they were excellent against West Ham on Monday.
Very pliant opponents, though, to
yeah,
be fair.
To be fair, yeah, they were very passive, West Ham. You know, Chelsea were able to do what they wanted. But I was impressed with the tempo that they played with more than anything, because I think watching Sarri's team play a lot this season, there hasn't been a tempo there. I watched them against Cardiff a couple of weeks ago, and they just didn't seem to kind of have a counter-attacking threat in them. And I don't know if it was just they were up for it more, or whether it was the team selection with Hudson-Odoi playing in there, who's obviously a lot quicker. Hazard looked really up for it. I think he was maybe trying to prove a point to Zidane maybe for the summer. But I was really impressed with how they played. So this is a difficult game for Liverpool, and I think.
But I think Chelsea have finally put Hazard in his proper position. Obviously, they've got Higuain through the middle. They're not playing him, Hazard up there on his own. He can have space to wander. I think Hudson-Odoi adding pace on the right-hand side. Then you've got Kante, who seems to be, I wouldn't say he's a natural, but he's certainly grown into that attacking midfield role. So they've actually got a lot of pace about their team, yeah. which especially with Liverpool's fullbacks who like to get forward, they have got that situation with Liverpool being at home that they can hit on the counter. So, you know, it's, it really sets up to be a really interesting game.
What about the argument here, Dave, that Liverpool want this too much? Many of us would have watched the Jamie Carragher performance on Friday against Southampton, where it was basically a return to fan zone. And you extrapolate that to all the fans that are there going on about how much they want to win this first league title. Champions League means nothing. Nothing else means nothing. Dinner means nothing. Oxygen means nothing. All that matters is winning the Premier League. And we have seen Liverpool capitulate to that pressure previously.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you can call it a capitulation. That was a freak situation that happened against Chelsea in the last time round. Mm-hmm. That slip ruined everything. But I mean, how many times is that going to happen? 99% of times Gerrard doesn't slip there. And I don't know whether you can say that that was due to the pressure. Maybe only he's the only person that could tell you that. And the fans obviously are desperate to win the league, but it's about whether the players, their mentality, are they affected by the fans? You guys will be able to tell me how much notice as a player in that situation are you taking of everything the fans are saying and everything else in the media.
I think, of course, as a player, you're aware of it, and certainly Jurgen Klopp's aware of it as well. I think after the Tottenham game, which they won in the last kind of seconds of the game, his post-match interview, he kind of alluded to the fans and how calm they were, and he stepped behind the team, and you could tell he was almost trying to make a statement to the fans a little bit about how that's how they need to be now between now and the end of the season, and not get too frustrated or panicky, because that will then feed into the players. So the Liverpool fans, they are desperate to win it, and it's understandable because they haven't won one, so you can understand their expectations being different to a Man City who've already done it, or United who've done it over many a year. But I think they do have to be a little bit careful that it doesn't put added then expectation and too much pressure then on the players, because a lot of these players haven't been in that situation before. So I even look at like social media, like Liverpool's account, and every game it's all Virgil van Dijk, or Salah this.
So, the new Maldini, Van Dijk.
Yeah, I mean,
greatest defender in the world.
Any little thing that he does there.
Before him, there was no defending.
Everything's kind of posted up, and it's just, I think sometimes they just get a bit too kind of carried away with themselves, and I think that's why a lot of people outside of Liverpool obviously don't want them to win the Premier League, because they just think that it's going to be an absolute nightmare, and never going to hear the end of it kind of thing. So, It's just about you've got to manage the pressure as a player, haven't you, Lomas?
Yeah, I think, listen, at the end of the day, the media's building it up. They love a good story. Yeah.
It is a good story as well, though. It doesn't need building up. They're building it up for us.
But what I'm saying is they have found a way. They haven't been at their accelerating best in the last 10 games, but they've found a way. And with them front three, if one's off or two's off, then Mane steps to the fourth. You know, Salah maybe hasn't had the best the last 10 games, but they've got so much quality. And I think as well, Kirby and Fabinho in midfield are finally looking like finding their feet. I watched the two of them against West Ham early in the season, and Liverpool really missed Jordan Henderson and Milner. That's how poorly they played. But the last 4 or 5 weeks, it looks like them two are really finding their feet.
What about Naby Keita? Let's talk a bit about him, because he has been thought of as a bit of a flop this season. So many Liverpool fans were talking like he would be the star midfielder. We spoke previously, Dave, on the show about Liverpool not scoring goals from midfield. Scored against Porto, scored against Southampton, is getting forward, maybe developing into the player, Gabs, that we thought he was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, these players that come into the Premier League, sometimes it can take a little bit of time. I think everybody was hoping from a Liverpool point of view that he would add to that midfield and bring something different to what they already had. I do think maybe next season might be his season, because I do like how he plays.
Particularly when you're right at the top end as well. It's not like you're coming in playing for West Ham. You're coming in, you're playing for Liverpool, a team that is right at the pinnacle of the league. Yeah. It must be tough.
Yeah. Plus as well, I think the way Klopp plays, he basically wants his three, more or less, the last 18 months, their doggers, run about, get it and give it, give it to the front three and let the two fullbacks go and join in and be the creators. They're basically what I call second phase players. Win the ball and keep second phase pressure on. And like I say, and you look at Henderson, Milner, they've done that good job. You thought Kevy coming in would be something different, and I think he's finally shown that.
Yeah.
Liverpool can have a bit of variation running forward from midfield.
I think he's just trying to find his place in the team, his right position. He's kind of playing off the left side of a three in midfield, and he just looked initially, I thought, that he didn't really understand the role and what was required of him. But I think in recent weeks, he looks like he's a bit more confident. I like actually what he's done with Henderson, Klopp as well. You know, he's moved him further forward as well. He's, for a long time, he's been that kind of holding midfielder, and last couple of games he's actually played him as a box to box.
Requested it apparently, yeah. Saying he could do more.
Apparently, yes, and I thought this myself, because I think when he plays for England, he plays a little bit more further forward, and you can see he's actually trying to be more forward thinking and play those kind of defence splitting passes, which we saw.
He's been looking on it. A lot of teams have found out Salah. Firmino coming short and Salah the diagonal run. So a lot of fullbacks are playing narrow. So he's then now asking the question of Henderson, can you then break in the box and be another body rather than Mo Salah just making that one run forward?
One final question before we move on from this game. Got to ask you about Chelsea fans. Are they the worst fans in English football? Are they the Real Madrid fans of English football? Chelsea currently sit third. They're on a winning run of three in a row. In the last game away from home, we get chance of Sarri out, F Sarri ball. It's very audible. You know, it hasn't been amazing this season. They've not been Liverpool. They've not been City. But it's not been that bad. And yet, they're screaming for the manager out in a way that Huddersfield never did for David Wagner. Cardiff haven't done for Neil Warnock. Well, yeah, any of that stuff.
You cannot compare the Chelsea.
Of course I can. They're an all right season.
Because your expectations are completely different.
Is third not their expectation then?
No, but
and being in the latter stage of the Europa League.
They are used to winning Premier Leagues. They've won the Champions League. They've won it all. And they're used to getting the best. So that's why.
So you think this is fair that Sarri's getting out of my club?
You can make a case to say that they should be happy with third. But I can also see why some of them, when they've experienced what they have over the years, think that this season hasn't been good enough.
But you also make a case of that squad should be doing better. Should be closer to the two. All right, maybe finishing third, but being points wise closer. I think.
But they're top of the four, four that are chasing.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in terms of you look at that squad, what they've got, some great players. Higuain, Giroud, listen, he scored 10 goals.
Giroud's 33 and couldn't get off Arsenal's bench. But Higuain can't score a goal unless it's Huddersfield. Kante, they've basically got Hazard.
They've got Kante. He's a double Premiership winner. He's a World Cup winner. Come on, they've got a good player.
I can't believe you guys are defending Chelsea fans. I thought you'd be on my team here.
Listen,
I only brought this up because you two are in.
I'm not talking about the fans.
You must have had some abuse from the Chelsea fans down the years, Steve.
There's abuse everywhere, Tom. You know that, yeah. But in terms of, I remember Chelsea when they were 16,000. So since Abramovich has turned up, they've almost found 25,000 from somewhere. You know, they're not the proper Chelsea fans. And I think the proper Chelsea fans would say they're not proper Chelsea fans.
Yeah, it was a great joke this week. Chelsea banning plastic at Stamford Bridge. And someone quipped, well, that means they've got no fans then, which will be a shame. We've got to move on, though. When we come back, Crystal Palace up against Man City. We'll talk about Tottenham as well. Right, let's get on. Crystal Palace up against Manchester City. 2:05 UK time this Sunday. Crystal Palace looking to complete a top-flight double over Man City for the first time since 1972-73. They are a bad side at home. Just 41% of their points have come at home this season, the lowest ratio in the Premier Division. City have won their last 8 Premier League games, 6 clean sheets in that time. We will get to Palace, but we've got to talk about Man City first. Beaten by Tottenham Hotspur in the Champions League in midweek. Struggled as well, Steve, in the game you and I covered on Saturday against Brighton. They weren't great in that game, and Brighton came on strong late on. And if they had someone who could score a goal for them, I think they probably would have done. If a Deulofeu type was able to come off the bench, they'd have got something against Man City. What have you made of their last couple of performances?
Yeah, not great, Tom. You hit the nail on the head. Against Brighton, like you said, if they had somebody that could have took the chance at, I fancy Brighton to go on and win. So it just looked like they're a little bit sloppy, as I would say. They've got their mind on other things. But what a great opportunity this weekend to go away. Palace not great at home to get the 3 points and really ask the question of Liverpool, who obviously, as we know, have got a real tough game, and really put pressure on and see what Liverpool are made of.
What about Fabian Delph? Can I ask you about him? You watch a lot of Man City, of course, captain the club as well. Every time I see him, I think he's an absolute liability. Every time I see him, it's kind of his fault a goal has gone in. He wasn't alert enough in the right position. You can't necessarily blame him for that, as he's not a proper left-back, a trained left-back. So why does he get the nod, or Zinchenko's been playing a lot before he got injured, and not Mendy in the Champions League game?
Well, it is strange. Certainly with him giving Mendy a start against Brighton and then taking him off with 15 minutes left, you thought, yeah, he's going to rest him for the game. So I was really surprised at Delph. I think he did well last season at left-back in spells, but he had a good run of about 30 games. But I think teams have found him out because obviously he's a midfielder in terms of, and Danny's probably better explain it to me, that you've got to get in good defensive positions early enough as a fullback, and maybe he's more reactive, you know, really than getting in there early, and people seem to get across him very easy. And I think certainly teams are looking at Man City and thinking, if we can get at them defensively in the forward areas, he's certainly the weak point.
And Gabs, Man City, do Palace have the quality to get at them this weekend?
They do, yeah, going forward. I mean, they showed what they did at the Etihad a little bit earlier in the season where they beat them. But, you know, as we've said, it's not a fortress Selhurst anymore. Their away form has been very good. So, I mean, obviously, of course, they, you know, they're going to have to defend really well. But with the likes of Zahar, Townsend, Bashuai, their standard penalty with Milivojevic, they might have a chance. But City, I mean, no, they haven't been great in the last couple of weeks, but they've been doing enough, haven't they? And they have so much quality. They can play in third gear and still pick up results. And it's a bit of a strange one, really, the left-back position, because they have so much quality. You'd think they would have a number two kind of left-back. But, you know, Mendy with the injury kind of issues he's had, and you have to play Zinchenko there or Delph there. And it's not kind of ideal, particularly when you kind of come up against top-quality teams. They will target those areas, as we've seen. So, you know, I feel a little bit sorry for Delph, as Lomi said. You know, it's not his kind of natural position. And he will do a job for some games, but there are going to be games where he gets caught out. And I probably think he trusts him more than Mendy defensively, to be honest with you. Mendy, great going forward. Yeah, but
I think he's got the dilemma as well, as he could put Laporte there. But in terms of you going against two flying wingers, so
and he's been their best centre-back.
Exactly. For me, if you do that, you're going to throw a wide player up against him and say, right, go and have a run at him. So
tough game for City, yeah, though.
It's a real big decision for him. Does he go? I think he'll probably stick with Delph. You'll think, bet the devil I know.
I was really surprised that he did play that in that game last night, because when he has started this season, it's not been in the big matches. Mm. And that, I mean, that is one of their biggest matches.
The other thing I can only think of, Dave, is that maybe Mendy obviously has got an issue with his knee, so maybe after that game he's got a bit of swelling and he couldn't play as quickly. So maybe
it's more like he was up Yates's in Manchester Town Centre, isn't it? Let's face it. With some of the girls in the office.
I think this is, as you said, Dan, I think this is a tricky game for City. They should win it. But do you remember in the All or Nothing Amazon documentary last season? This was a really difficult game for City, and Pep made a big point before the game of telling to his players, look, guys, I know it's Crystal Palace, I know they're down near the bottom, but this team is really dangerous. We've done analysis on them, some of their wide players that could cause us real problems, and it proved to be one of their most difficult games last season. They've already lost to them this season. They're not in great shape, so they need a performance.
Well, there's some City fans actually thinking that Pep rested De Bruyne and Sane in the Champions League for this game on the weekend, because Pep knows the difficulty of it. So be interested to see if those players kind of come in for the Palace game. But it's one of City's trickiest fixtures that they've got left. Palace are capable on their day of beating anybody in the league, you know, if Wilf's on his game and Andros on the other side.
And they don't cross to Benteke. That's key,
isn't
it? He
doesn't play, basically.
Don't bring on Benteke. There was a point during the game against Newcastle where the commentary team were saying, right, last 20, let's get on Benteke. And then there was a cross to him, back post, simple effort. Same against Spurs. And he slides on the ground and kind of scuffs it.
Great defending.
From Benteke, listen, on great defending, can I ask you a question, Gabs, on something you mentioned there? I heard the commentator in the game between Tottenham and Man City talking about Laporte, and he was saying that a lot of City fans would consider him as important as Virgil van Dijk for Liverpool fans. You've said something similar there, in that you think he's been their best defender. This is not something I have noticed this season. Tell me why he has been so good.
I think similar to Virgil van Dijk, his all-round kind of game.
He's nowhere near as good in the air as Van Dijk.
No, he's not as physically strong as Van Dijk. He's probably not as quick, but he's very calm on the ball. You know, his passing range is very good. It's a well as good as Van Dijk, I think, with a crossfield ball. I wouldn't say he's probably his leadership skills as big as Van Dijk's either, but he has been very consistent. When he came in from Bilbao, I was a little bit sceptical about his defensive abilities, to be honest with you. I knew he was a very good player on the ball, but I wasn't sure how good he was defensively, having seen him at Bilbao. But I have to say, he's this season, he's improved. He's done really well. He's been their standout centre-back. So I just think all around he's been pretty good, even defensively. And to be fair, he didn't have a lot to do, does he, defensively, when you're a City defender. You spent most of the time just admiring the attacking players and what they're doing. But no, he's been very consistent. I've been impressed with him, yeah.
Just finally on the up front situation with Man City, Steve, we saw Gabriel Jesus, we've seen Sergio Aguero. Aguero, I thought, looked off the pace against Tottenham. I don't know what everyone else thinks of that, but Jesus, when he's come in, hasn't really done it this campaign. Is that an issue for City, and who starts this weekend?
Well, it wasn't about 5 weeks ago because Aguero was in such good form, but it seems that he's had a little knock-off, and I think the penalty summed up his performance. For me, he looked a bit sluggish, like you said, Tom, and Jesus has done okay, but he hasn't really cemented a place.
Not convinced, really.
But listen, in terms of a backup, I think the three behind and the variation of the three behind is as good, if not better, than anybody. And I think they'll always be able to get through it, which is exactly what they've been doing the last six games, just doing enough.
Listen, let's move on to Tottenham against Huddersfield Town. That's Saturday, 12:30 UK time. Of course, Spurs beating City in midweek in the Champions League, but not without cost. Harry Kane went off in the second half of that game. Maurizio Pochettino says he might miss the rest of this season. That challenge reminded me a lot, Gabs, of Andy Carroll in a lot of ways. Poor old Andy, God bless him. But he comes back from a long-term injury, and we used to always say of Andy Carroll, we thought he could stay fit. Just stop rushing into unnecessary challenges. Stop playing like a battering ram, like the Tasmanian devil. Just pull back a little bit. And that challenge on Delph seemed unnecessary. Does someone need to speak to Harry Kane and maybe to tell him to pull out of those kind of things? Can it be done?
I don't think he needs to be spoken to and told to change his game and not go in for those tackles. That's who he is. That's what makes him part of the player that he is. You know, he is very hardworking. Maybe he just got rushed back from the injury too quickly as well. You know, every time he has got injured, they've really kind of rushed him back, I think, and thrown him straight into the team. And sometimes initially you can get through the first game, second game. Sometimes then it's maybe the fifth or the sixth game suddenly where maybe you're lacking a bit of physicality and maybe you re-injure yourself or whatever, you know, what happened with Delph there.
He's injured his ankle every season for the last few years, isn't he? He's clearly got a problem with the ankle. And at City, like, riled him up a bit last night, didn't they?
Yeah.
They were going in hard on him. They were,
it was frustration, I think, leaving him on it.
And I think you could see, you know, he went into that challenge thinking, right, I'm going to give you a bit back here, and it's backfired.
Should Fernandinho have been sent off for that challenge, as an aside, when he kind of lands on Harry Kane, then kind of pushes his forearm into the back of his head? Would you have sent him off, Dave, for that?
Did the referee not see it?
There was nothing in the game. It was a free kick, no yellow, no red.
You know, the VAR checks everything, and if they think there's an infringement, they should inform the referee. So
I think it's not good for Tottenham, but I think deep down, a break to the end of the season and a fresh Harry Kane coming into the thing would be better all round, I think, for Tottenham long term. Like you're saying, like Gab's saying, is you can get through on adrenaline, but the natural fitness, and let's have it right, he's just come back from a World Cup, so he's just constantly playing. And, you know, the more you play, unfortunately, you can't say to somebody, listen, change your game. Can you go in and stop making challenges? In the heat of the game, you're going to go for a challenge. You ain't going to go for a challenge and think, oh, I better not. It's very impossible to do that. And I think a rest might do Harry Kane the world of good.
Hopefully, he'll be back soon, before the end of the season. We don't know, as we record the programme, just how bad the diagnosis is for that injury. Let's talk about Heung-min Son. Dave, you were there a few days ago when he scored the first goal at the brand new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. He's the first European scorer there as well. He's a pretty adequate backup for Harry Kane.
He is, and when Spurs went on that great run, whilst Harry Kane was injured, he was the main man. And there is a feeling that when Harry Kane came back into the team, Son's impact was nullified a little bit. I mean, he's still been playing really well and scoring goals, but he does give them a different dimension when he's playing up front to Harry Kane. Obviously, Harry Kane's brilliant on his day, but they do play in a different way. And I don't think it's a complete disaster for Spurs to not have Harry Kane available. It'd
be interesting to see if he leaves them out this weekend. You know, keep him fresh. Yeah. I think they might look to protect him. I think just by definition, with him playing in a slightly wider role, he isn't going to be as effective. It's as simple as that. And I think he relishes being that main man whenever Harry's not there, because he very much knows the onus is on him to score goals. And more often than not, he's come up trumps. Mm.
I think it's interesting that, isn't it, the team selection? Because City are going to need to play a strong side against Palace, because that's a very, very tough game. Spurs against Huddersfield could probably win with the third team.
Put the kit man up front, couldn't he?
You know what?
I mean, he could, couldn't he?
You know what?
Why not?
When Poch has tended to rotate, though, they've struggled, you know, off the back of Champions League games and stuff, and he's rotated three or four.
But the problem is it's normally Llorente's coming on, and they can't play the same way with Llorente. They've got to get crosses in the box for him. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
you'd think, you know, Huddersfield relegated Tottenham, and you would think they would have enough to win the game. And you probably will see maybe three or four changes. But I don't think he'll be as kind of clinical a win as you would think. I think they'll get the job done, but I think it'd be a bit more of a struggle if Poch wants to start rotating, because that's what has been the norm, really, when he has done that in the past.
We won't waste too much time at Huddersfield Town, but I will mention this, a story that I read earlier in the week, and a couple of people I know that got some context there. They're all pretty convinced that Jan Sievert won't be there come the start of next season. Apparently upset some of the senior players, whomever those senior players are at Huddersfield Town, you tell me, but it just hasn't worked at all. I think about Darren Moore last year. They still went down West Brom, but they went down kicking and screaming. And yes, this is not as good a squad as that. I get all that. But they've really offered almost no resistance, have they? I mean, what has Jan Sievert actually done to earn the right to be their manager come the start of next season?
I think, they've tried to do the same scenario with David Wagner, followed, you know, president of that there. It hasn't worked. I've seen some of his interviews. He's been very scathing of the players. And players look at that and think, hold on a wee minute, you're the manager, you've got to accept a certain amount of responsibility as well. I think added to they're going to be in the Championship, it's a different league, they're going to have to get rid of a load of players. Is he the man to do that recruitment policy? It probably seems to be the answer is no.
Right, let's move on. Next up, we'll talk about the FA Cup finalists, Watford, who take on Arsenal on Monday Night Football.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Right, let's get to the big result of last weekend. David Walker, TalkSport's football editor. Let's come to you first on this tremendous news that both Kofi Kingston and Seth Rollins took the WWE major singles titles at WrestleMania. You must have been thrilled.
I think you're forgetting about Becky Lynch as well.
Of course, the man beating Ronda Rousey in the headline.
You give it all the big and you know exactly what
I watched
you're talking
it, but I didn't
about.
Go.
Yeah, exactly. Well, more for you, my friend.
Yeah, I stayed up watching it. Was WrestleMania good? That is what the audience want to know.
It was fantastic. It was far too long. 7.5 hours
Is that
long.
How long it was?
I was still there, gone 9:30. Took me 2 hours to get an Uber.
And everyone else gone home, but you were still there.
Well, there were thousands of us trying to get cabs. It was a disaster. But of course, the big main event of the day was earlier on, wasn't
yes!
it?
Yes!
11 a.m. kickoff New York time. I've never experienced a football match like that. And I actually people, more than one person said to me, I can't believe you weren't there. What were you doing? Why weren't you in the stadium? But I actually think I had a better time watching it where I did than I would have done if I was
So where
there.
Were you? You're watching God, it with a... Well, let him justify
exactly.
it. You never know.
I was in the basement of a bar in New York City with about 30 other Watford fans who either lived in New York, were there on holiday, were there for WrestleMania or whatever. If I was over here, I would have been at work, actually. I would have been there in the press box. I wouldn't have been able to go as mad as I did. And as you can hear, my voice is only just recovering from Sunday.
First of all, Tom, there isn't 30 Watford fans in Watford. Never mind New York. So straight away, I'm not having that one.
The fact, Dave, that you're in New York when Watford are playing in an FA Cup semi-final tells me you didn't expect Watford to get to the FA Cup semi-final in the first place. That's why.
No belief in Javi Gracia.
You could be forgiven for thinking of that. May
is he going to be allowed back? That is the question. Are you going to be allowed back?
I've got to go back to New York for the final.
Yeah, but you can't book your flight 2 years in advance to get that cheap rate, though, can you?
We need Watford fans to club together to make sure that happens. That is what needs to be the case. Same pants, same location. Let's get to the game. Let's talk about the game because, I mean, Steve, we did the game on the Saturday, which was, you know, it was better than we kind of thought it would be, but wasn't great. This game is going to go down, at the very least at the new Wembley, as for me, the best semi-final we've seen there. 79 minutes and it was still 2-0 to Wolves?
It was a throwback FA Cup tie, wasn't it? What the FA Cup used to be all about, you know, the likes of when Houchen scored for Coventry. It just lifted the spirits of the cup, and I think it had a rough deal about 5 or 6 years ago, but now there's a bit of prestige coming back in the game. And I haven't enjoyed a game of football like that in many a year, and I was in my local boozer.
There we go.
And
with 30 Watford fans.
With 30 Watford fans in Buckerstill. But it was a great game. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think Wolves, they just thought they had it done, didn't they?
Yeah.
And for me, the manager made the wrong subs.
Yeah, you say 2-0 down with 10 minutes to go. Yeah. I mean, the real thing was it was 2-1 down with, 10 seconds to go. I mean, that was the thing. They got the goal back, but it looked like they just weren't going to get the other chance. So they're huffing and puffing, but it wasn't going to come. And then the penalty in the last minute, I mean, that was absolutely unbelievable.
Let's talk about Troy Deeney, shall we? Let's talk about the sheer cojones on the guy to take the penalty. I thought he was brilliant. In all of his post-match interviews as well, people are saying things like, you know, be a better winner. But we want a bit of fun. He's a great personality. And it was, you know, you get that mask out, that luchador mask out. You deserve to get beaten in the cup semi-final, don't
you? Yeah, he should really have been sitting with Dan, shouldn't he? Dave, sorry. He should be sitting with Dave doing a bit of WWF.
But what about Troy Deeney, Gabs? I mean, he's a great character, but a really, really good footballer as well. We kind of lose that a lot because we talk about his personality.
Yeah, and he was the one person throughout the game, until obviously Deulofeu came on and changed it, he was the one guy that looked like might, you know, get Watford back into the game. His physicality, his presence at top, he was causing problems when balls were coming into the box. They were just lacking a bit of quality, really. The best ball that kind of went in was one produced from him and Andre Gray, who had two great chances in the game, didn't score either of them. But obviously Deulofeu coming on.
What a goal.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to obviously commentate on it for TalkSport, and I was out of my seat. I couldn't contain myself when that went. It was a brilliant piece of individual
skill. I think the thing
skill.
About Troy Deeney, he is a throwback, but he's a great throwback. He's a centre forward. When it goes up, it sticks. And as Danny will tell you, if you're a defender, you're delighted you've got somebody like this because he relieves pressure. Yeah. As a midfielder, you can play it round the corner, it sticks, you can go and join in off him because you know it's not going to be like a pebble dash wall like you're playing with Ian Dowie. It's like playing a 1-2 off a pebble dash wall. You didn't know what way it was coming back. But listen, I love him. I think he's fantastic. Yeah. He's great for the media, and more to the point, he's great for Watford.
I'd hate to play against him.
I ask you about mindset here, Gabs? You've been in this situation. The FA Cup final's coming up in 5 weeks, 6 weeks, something like that, maybe a little bit less. You've done it with West Ham a few years ago. What are those games like where you were pretty safe at that point? West Ham weren't in any real trouble. FA Cup final's coming up. Did you feel you lost any, not motivation, but any intensity in the performance?
No, kept us going, that thought of the final. We had a very similar season to Watford's. I think we finished top 10, got to an FA Cup final, and it's very easy when you say you're 7th, 8th, where Watford are, for the season to kind of peter out and you know, you feel your holidays are coming in, your intensity drops a little bit, but the fact you've kind of got an FA Cup final now to look forward to, that just keeps you motivated, because places are up for grabs now, yeah, between now and the cup final. So everybody is going to be on their toes wanting to impress the manager.
It was the same thing in the run-up to the semi-final. Yeah. Andre Gray played his way into the team. Yeah. You know, he came off the bench in successive matches and scored goals and changed games, got himself a start in the semi-final. And those players, like Delafeo, obviously changed the game on Sunday, and he'll want to be starting the final.
Yeah, I think that's what the manager said. He was angry. So maybe is that the dilemma? Does he start on the bench for the final? I'm sure he won't want to, but he's a great weapon coming off when the game's stretched.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think Delafeu, the Premier League game before against Fulham, got dragged off after about half time because he wasn't tracking back and doing his defensive work. So Javi Gracia just went off, you come son. Andre Gray, who said Dave has been doing really well off the bench, played himself into the game on the weekend, so he's got one or two selection dilemmas going into the final.
I think maybe as well, with Man City, they're going to dominate the ball, does he? So the dilemma he's going to have is, does he go workmanlike for the first 60 minutes and then maybe hopefully be in the game and then throw Delafeu on when the game opens up a little
and
bit?
They can't throw away the league either, because in all probability, barring a miraculous
that's
game
not the
like
spirit,
last
Dave.
Time, you know,
what's think of Kofi Kingston. Think of Seth Rollins.
In balance of probability, you'll probably lose that final to Manchester City, and that means you won't get the European spot. Watford want to finish in seventh spot to get the Europa League place.
Listen, let's bring it back to this Monday night football. Up against Arsenal at Vicarage Road on Monday, Watford they're unbeaten in their last five Premier League home games, three victories and two draws in that time. Arsenal yet to keep a clean sheet away from home. On Arsenal, can they possibly finishing the top four with this away form continuing for the final few games of the season? Do they have to go to Watford and win, Gabs?
I think they probably do, yeah. I don't know. Well, their home form's been very good this season, Arsenal. I don't know why.
Fantastic
away from
home, at
home. Totally different team. Everton, you know, last week, I think everybody was looking at that game and saying, oh, can Arsenal kind of make a statement? Now they kind of got into that top four, go to Everton, who are in decent-ish form, and get a result there, and they were kind of found wanting again. So it's a difficult game again. Watford are going to have their tails up, obviously. But if they want to get... I'd be surprised if Arsenal finish in that. I did not see Arsenal finishing in the top
I think
four
as well, you look at Man United's going to beat West Ham and Tottenham's going to beat Huddersfield. Yeah. So they're going to have to match that result if they're going to drop further behind, for me.
Yeah.
Huge game on Monday. I want to ask you briefly about Mesut Ozil as well. You know what? I watched Mesut Ozil against Newcastle in the game they won. I was doing the commentary of the game, and I come away and I was thinking to myself, well, he wasn't great. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. And it's funny how different people read the games differently. The TV gave him man of the match, or the papers gave him man of the match. There was a whole thing, I think it was in the Mirror, saying how fantastic it was and he's back to his best. And I didn't quite see that. What about Mesut Ozil for a game like this? Watford away? Can't play Mesut Ozil here, can you? Against a hard-working midfield like Watford have got? Athletes?
Well, listen, he should be doing better with his quality for me. Taking away the ridiculous wage he's on, in terms of his quality, he should have a greater impact on the team. Really, he should be first in the team sheet for me with what they've got up front with Aubameyang and Lacazette. You would think somebody like him feeding, slotting little balls through, but he just seems to at times do enough, and you're thinking, you just want to give him a shake and say, come on, we need more from you. Because defensively, you offer nothing. So we had similar when we met West Ham, people like Al Berkovic and Paolo Di Canio, but they offered going forward, and you just want them to do more.
A pair of those could put themselves about as well, couldn't they, right? If they wanted to.
No, I don't think so.
Di Canio occasionally, if he was pulling someone's shirt or like, you know,
yeah, but he didn't
flicking
like,
the V's behind
their really edge. He didn't really want to play north of Watford, though.
No,
did
that
he?
Is true, no, yeah. Home, turned up once in Manchester, scored, never went back.
At home against Newcastle, that's Ozil's kind of game. You know, Newcastle are going to come sit there with a back five or whatever, three in front, and that's his game, you know, getting lots of the ball then and trying to, you know, pick open a hole in Newcastle's defence. Going away to Everton or away to Watford, Tom, as you said, who are like a high-intensity team, Decore and Kapua, high-energy athletes. I don't see him playing.
I wouldn't put Mesut Ozil in the Watford team, let alone the Arsenal team for Monday Night Football. But there you go. Yeah, well, he's been really good.
He has.
That goal he scored a couple of weeks ago as well. Fantastic against Fulham. Oh, yeah. Better than anything Ozil's ever done. Sorry, Arsenal fans. Let's get to Leicester against Newcastle. We start the weekend on Friday night football. Now, some of you may be listening on Saturday morning. Apologies for that, but we are going to briefly try and preview this with a couple of quick stories. Jamie Vardy has scored 6 goals in Leicester's 5 Premier League games under Brendan Rodgers. 50% of the total under the new manager. Steve, finally a manager at Leicester has gone, you know what we should do? Try and get the ball to Jamie Vardy in the box.
Well, listen, for me, you don't break it. Jamie wants it in behind in terms of he wants the ball in behind to use his pace. Obviously, the previous manager, Puel, they didn't get on because Jamie Vardy probably quite rightly goes, well, hold on a wee minute. It's worked for us. Why are you trying to change it? You know what I mean? I'm the main man at this club. Build the team around me. And Brendan's been quite rightly went back in there, give an arm around Jamie Vardy and said, Jamie, listen, we're going to play to your strengths. And it's not rocket science. And you can see why it's working. Because obviously Jamie wants to prove that the previous manager was wrong. And he was right.
And he's got that build-up play now from Yuri Tielemans as well. It looks absolutely fantastic. I wonder if he's played so good, he's actually played his way to a bigger side than Leicester during the summer transfer
James
window.
James Maddison as well, another bit of quality. Yeah. So, yeah, I can only see that being a win.
Just quickly on Newcastle United, they've really struggled since Sean Longstaff got injured. Him and Hayden were looking so good in the centre midfield, and he's obviously missing. Lejeune out as well, another long-term injury for him, another guy that just keeps on getting injured. They're kind of bundling their way through Newcastle. They're all but safe at this point of the season. Interestingly, though, on Monday Night Football last week, Dave Kitson was in with us, and he told me, and he told our audience, that Newcastle were basically sold. It's all done. £300 to £400 million, and it'll be announced before the end of the season. Whether that's true, I don't know. That's Dave's view on it, and he tends to know these kind of things. If that happens, Gabs, does Rafa stay? If it doesn't, does he go?
I think he would probably stay as long as he's got certain assurances of your transfer budget and what have you, a bump, a new contract. I could see him staying. I think
he stays either way, to be honest.
Do you, even with this squad under Mike Ashley?
I do.
Why?
I think, you know, it's been the continual narrative has always been, oh, Rafa's going to quit. And unless he gets an amazing job offer from someone else, which I suppose is a possibility, I think he'll, you know, even if they don't sell it before
what's
the end
his wages
of the season,
are at? He's on £7 million a year.
Decent, yeah.
I think he's quite happy there.
His contract's running out, no?
I think it runs at the end of this season, 3 months. He can sign for someone else now if he wants to.
There's talk that he's going to sign a new one.
We shall see. That is Friday night football. Leicester up against Newcastle United at the King Power Stadium. Next up, plenty more to get through. We'll start with Cardiff, who quite simply have to win for me against Burnley on Saturday. Right, 5 more games to get through here. We'll start with Burnley up against Cardiff, Saturday at 3 o'clock UK time. Burnley manager Sean Dyche has never lost against Neil Warnock, winning 4 of their 5 games. Burnley in tremendous form, winning their last 2. Cardiff, just 1 win in their last 6. Of course, that came against the whipping boys of West Ham United. Gabs, got to come to you on this, of course. Former Cardiff manager, former Cardiff player. You've had to endure them a lot this season as an analyst as well. Is it last chance saloon? Is it victory at Burnley or bust?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way of putting it, to be fair. They need a win. Obviously, you know, 5-point gap between them and Southampton. Southampton or Wolves this weekend. I think Wolves off the back of their disappointment, that's a good time to kind of play them. I'd fancy Southampton at home. If that gap kind of gets any more, you just cannot see it happening. So, you know, it's a big game for both teams. Burnley, I've got a horrendous run in after Cardiff. So if they beat Cardiff, you kind of think they're probably safe. I think it was at 11 points then. With the 4 kind of games after that, they play the top 4 pretty much. So, sorry, Everton in there as well.
So we're playing like a top 4 team. Well,
yeah, so if they beat Cardiff, they're pretty much safe. Cardiff, it is a must win. And I think the positive for them is, yeah, they know exactly what they need to do. There can be no more mistakes. There can be no kind of sitting back and trying to play for a point. They have to go out and win the game. So
can they do that? Is that something this manager can do?
They can. I think you look at Burnley, the way they've been over the season. Yes, they've had some good results, but there's been some really poor results in as well. You look at both teams and kind of how they play. Neither team really wants to control possession or take control of the game and take it to the opposition. But I think Cardiff will have to be more that way, obviously, because they need to win. So Obviously, team selection is going to be really important from Neil Warnock. I think the last couple of games, he's got that right. Obviously, the Chelsea game was really disappointing. That was a dagger blow. And then they went to Man City, which you wouldn't expect them to get anything. But I think he's kind of settled on a decent kind of starting 11. I expect it to be very similar to the last two games. And that is an 11 capable of getting the results. So it's a massive, massive game, yeah.
Burnley have turned it around, Steve, yeah. Once again. They've been weirdly streaky this year. Runs of losses. Mm-hmm. On another run of wins at the moment. Should they win this game, they're probably safe from relegation. Is that enough?
Not just them. Southampton and Brighton will be desperate for Burnley to win, and really, I think that would be it for Cardiff. They've been really strange. I watched them earlier in the season against West Ham. They looked like they were trying to get away. They were trying to change a little bit of style, trying to get the two centre-halves to step out and play in the midfield. It just wasn't working. They needed to get back to what they were. It's about getting it up to Wood and Barnes, getting up behind it, getting on second balls, getting the ball wide and in the box. And they've finally went back to that around Christmas time, and it's paid dividends.
They've been very good, the front two, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. You would hear playing against them too, because obviously Wood's a specimen. You know, he can run in behind, he can hold it up. Barnes is a right nuisance, isn't he? He's the modern-day David Speedy.
And Dwight McNeil on the left, I have to say, youngster.
Been fantastic. Listen, Cardiff fans, don't be too despondent as yet. We have seen games like this turn so many times over the years. You know, you two have been involved in games like this where you thought you might be going down, then suddenly you beat Chelsea, you win a massive game, you know, and the Reverend Grant probably not, but in other seasons you did. So you never, ever know. It's going to be a huge game. It's our international feature game, Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. Let's move on. Manchester United up against West Ham is also Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. We are recording this programme before United play against Barcelona, so we'll assume everyone has come through that game fit. But we can go back to their last Premier League game where they were outplayed by Wolverhampton Wanderers yet again. Second time this season United have struggled in that game. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer signed a new contract and the form's tailed off, Stevie Lomas. Why is that?
Well, I just think it's a period. I don't think they're as good as United team as have been in the past. It's quite as simple as that there. There needs to be big change. I'm really keen to see what Ole does. He's obviously managed down well with the players, but can he manage up in terms of the budget? Because they need to really, I think, have a clear out at Man United. There's been too many players there for too long. He needs to get a bit young, hungrier in there, play a typical Man United team on the front foot, get it wide, get in the box, plenty of crosses. You look at the likes of Sanchez, the problem they've got is, can they get rid of players that got there with the wages that they're on? That'll be his issue. I think it'll be a no-brainer. I think West Ham are a team that have got the flip-flops on, ready for the summer. And I think it'll be a routine 3-0 victory.
Gabs, on West Ham, similar to what Steve was saying there about Manchester United, they've got a lot of players they'd like to shift on. Just want to ask you this question. Pellegrini's got a 3-year contract. We're coming towards the end of the first year of that. I'm not saying Pellegrini out, it's been a disaster, you know, F. Sarri ball, all that sort of stuff. However, at the end of this season, will there need to be a discussion about whether he gets a second year? Because some of the performances and results, just one point away in 2019, have got to be called into question.
I think they need to look at the manager and some of his decision making in some of the games. I've got to say, I wasn't fully convinced when he got the job, to be honest with you, and he hasn't done that much to convince me anymore since. It's been streaky from West Ham all season, really. There was a period where everybody was liking what he was trying to do. They were picking up results and they moved up the league, and then in recent weeks again now there's been some poor results in there. So you can question sometimes his team shape, his team selection. And again, I think it is another big job, as Lomi said about United there. I think there's a lot of dead wood there that needs to be cleared out. I thought it was a big job this summer with a lot of the players that he brought in. They spent a fair bit of money, West Ham, but it seems like they need to kind of do it again.
But do you not think, Gabs, they're really paying for the first three? I think we're playing catch-up. The first three or four windows when we moved across were catastrophic, weren't they, really?
Absolutely.
Maybe
terrible.
We signed about 30 players, and you could probably say two of them were a success.
Haphazard recruitment for a long time at West Ham. There was an enormous list of failed
guys. Yeah. You've been better playing him. Gok and Tor. You'd be better playing Gokwan at right wing than
whoever they've had in.
Exactly.
Jonathan Kyerry. Yeah. Anyway, you're absolutely right. Need a big window, West Ham, but, yeah,
but
all right
for
this season.
I think they need continuity as well. Yeah. I think if they change the manager again, I mean, they're changing every summer at the moment.
Fair point.
I think you're right. It's about the amount he gets to spend, and then I think Christmas next, you know, this year is really a good point to start judging him, because it will be more or less his team that he's assembled.
We shall see. Tough against Man U this weekend. Let's move on to Southampton against Wolves, Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. David Walker, what about Wolverhampton Wanderers? Imagine how you felt in the 78th minute watching that game in New York. That is how Wolverhampton Wanderers have been all week, in their luchador mask to cover their tears. How do the players, how do the fans as well, who are going to Southampton, you know, they will have a sense, won't they, despite the fact they're still in the run for seventh and all that, the season's over. It's tough to recover from.
Well, I, as I said about Watford earlier on, I think that Wolves even more so now, their focus will be completely on trying to finish seventh. And there are a few teams competing for that spot. Leicester are on the march. Even Everton are doing well, as we've discussed. Watford are very much in there. West Ham look like they might be, but probably not now. Because if you assume, perhaps wrongly, but if you assume that Manchester City will win the FA Cup, that means the Europa League spot will go to the seventh place and that it's up for grabs. Mm. So for Wolves to finish in Europe in their first season in the Premier League would be amazing, and you'd think they might be a team that would potentially have some fun in the Europa League next season as well. So that's got to be their motivation. It's going to be tough to pick yourself up after the disappointment of that game, surely. But they've got to start somewhere. Why not get Southampton?
I just worried about Wolves a little bit the last kind of period of that game. I know they were 2-0 up, but they just looked like their energy levels kind of dropped, and I just wonder if the season's kind of catching up with them a little bit now. You look at kind of Neves, that's not the first time he's kind of been substituted. It's happened in recent weeks quite a lot. I think Nuno has actually used the least amount of players, I think, in the league as well. Hasn't rotated the team too much, and just wondered whether now the season may be catching up with them a little bit. And obviously that the disappointment of the weekend going out in a semi-final, it'd be interesting to see how that affects them mentality-wise as well. But they have to pick themselves up, as Dave said. There's still kind of a lot to play for. Really important that they kind of finish the season strong. And I would like to see them actually in Europa next season, because I think obviously financially they're going to go again in the summer. They're going to spend more money, bring in some more quality players. And I do think over the next few years, Wolves can be a team that can threaten the top six. Yeah. So it's difficult, but I think...
I think you can. I was speaking to Steve Bull recently, and he reckons they've got all sorts of money. And obviously with Georgie Mendes there pulling the strings... You know, they're certainly going to... It's no spot of luck. They aim to be there for the future. It's not just a couple of seasons and see how we do. They're going to go at it. So it'll be interesting. Really looking forward to seeing what Wolves do in terms of signings in the summer.
Big future for Wolves. Big future for Southampton as well. No doubt they made the right decision changing their manager. They've won 5 of their last 12 Premier League games in 2019. They only won 6 in the whole of 2018. So it's already looking up, and they're about one win away. Let's move on to Fulham against Everton. Fulham are gone. Everton have been in tremendous form the last few weeks, looking to win 4 consecutive Premier League games for the first time since 2016. Where's it come from, Steve? All of a sudden, Everton look fantastic.
Yeah, look, you know, 5-6 weeks ago, people were calling for the manager's head, but out of nowhere, the players have strung a set of results together, which, when you look at the squad, they're more than capable, and they were, for me, they were underachieving, and they should be hitting this sort of form. But, like I say, another club, really, in the summer, massive that they get some strikers. They can't keep relying on the young lad all the time. I think they need quality, 2 or 3. They've got a basis of a good squad, but 2 or 3 key players, and I think they could really be a force that could push on.
Yeah, fantastic in recent weeks against the Fulham side, who have conceded at least 2 in each of their last 13 Premier League games, losing 12 of those. I've got to tell you this stat. The only team to have conceded 2 or more in consecutive top flight matches are Man United, 16 games back in 1930, and Newcastle back in 1977, 2 or more goals in consecutive games. Newcastle did it for 14, United for 16, Fulham now on 13. That is just a horrendous, historically bad record. They're going to find it tough next year to recover from this, aren't they?
Well, that's why they've ultimately been relegated, and relegated so badly. That the goals against column is just pathetically bad. And the defence was all over,
76 the place. 76 conceded, Dave.
From day one, it was all over the place. They had some forward players who early on in the season looked like they were doing okay, but the defence has been terrible and it's just dragged him down, hasn't it?
Yeah. Listen, when we came in this morning, obviously we met in reception, had a bit of a chat about what we're going to talk about today, and Gab said, make sure you give me a few minutes in the show today so I can hammer Bournemouth. So that's what we're going to do before we run out of time here. Brighton against Bournemouth, Saturday,
Bournemouth,
3 o'clock.
Come on, Dan.
Give them the hammering you've been thinking about all morning.
Did you get some bad candy floss down there at once?
What happened to you? What happened to you beachside?
I just don't understand them. They're just so streaky. Like they started the season well, then they just seem to tail off. They just concede goals for fun.
They've lost two centre halves, so Gav, lost two key defenders, which I think big characters in the team. And I think the way Eddie and I spoke about this in the past, that he's looked at it and thought, if you've got to stay in the Premier League, you've got to score goals. So we are going to get beat at times. We're going to be a streaky team, but with the players we've got going forward, we can always score goals. But that now, when the two defenders have been injured, has really, I think, exposed them.
Just 5 wins in 23 games. Only Fulham and Huddersfield have got a worse record since November. You take away that winning streak at the start of the campaign
relegation
when they won 6 of 10, they're third bottom.
I think outside of the bottom three, they've lost the most games this season, 17 losses. So I just think it's more than just, you know, two defenders being injured.
What is it? Well, Eddie Howe?
Oh, yeah, I think he has to take some responsibility. And, you know, if you've got key players injured, you have to find a way of still picking up results. I mean, a few weeks ago, Chelsea went there and they battered them, what was it, 3 or 4? And then the next week, they'll just lose to, you know, a game that they shouldn't have, against a team they shouldn't lose to. I mean, Burnley go in there and score in 3.
Yeah, lost against Burnley, lost against Leicester in recent times.
How often do they score 3 in a game? So, I don't know. I just think he has to take a little bit of responsibility of how he sets the team up.
Has he been there too long, though? We talk about this a lot, don't we, Eddie Howe? Is that what it is?
Maybe players are looking at it and think that the manager's going to be here a long time. We're comfortable. It's, you know, happy little Bournemouth. But I think some of their key players could be looking. The likes of Fraser looks like he's not signed a contract. He's been fantastic for them this year. You look at Callum Wilson would certainly be one that Josh King, another one. So you're looking at that. It's another big summer for Eddie, but I still think he's still doing a good job.
I think you've got to look at their recruitment though as well. You can question their recruitment over the last couple of seasons. I mean, Solanke coming in, I know he hasn't got going yet. He might prove to be a decent signing. There's a few players in there.
Is that not the level that Bournemouth are swimming in terms of them sort of players? You know, you're not going out.
What was Solanke though? About 20 million, wasn't he? Yeah. I mean, you're not spending big money on freebies. Lerma,
yeah, but we're not talking
million.
About
right,
we're not
though.
Talking about top level players, are we? That are going to come to Bournemouth. There are going to be so many more options for them top players. So that for me is they're recruiting in an area where you just don't know. You can't hang your hat on, even at 20 million. You can't hang your hat on that he's going to be a success in the Premier League.
Tough game to predict this weekend, Brighton against Bournemouth. Brighton have lost 3 of their last 5 Premier League home games, as many as they had in their previous 17 at the Amex Stadium. But no further time to talk about that, as we are done for this week. Our thanks go to Steve Lomas and Daniel Gabbardon. Also to our pal David Walker as well, who survived New York and is crowdfunding right now for a return flight for the 18th of May. Come on, Watford fans, dig deep. We're back next week. We'll see you then.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.